Cooking Podcast with me, Kat, and my co-host Beth. We talk to food entrepreneurs about their businesses, how they got started, the journey so far, and what gets them out of bed in the morning.
Today we're talking to Dixie, founder of Aphrodites, creators of Seriously Good Pomegranate Ketchup, sold in Selfridges and delis across the UK. They also cater, serving their natural and delicious med-inspired menus at weddings, events, and supper clubs. Hi,
welcome
Dixie.
Hello.
Hello.
Lovely intro.
I was going to say, do people think you're called Aphrodite?
I am called Aphrodite.
Are you?
Yeah. I was reading that on your website.
Yeah, so Dixie's actually short for Aphrodite.
I love that.
Weirdly. It's not really in real life, but Aphrodite's on my birth certificate. And I've been called Dixie since I was tiny, tiny. So,
that's such a beautiful name.
But I don't use it, so we thought, let's use that as our business name.
Okay.
And because that's Eastern Mediterranean food is the kind of food that I generally do. Mm. But general Mediterranean, but mostly Eastern Mediterranean, yeah. So it seemed fitting. Although we did go around in circles, thinking of a name for a business is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. I'm pregnant now, and thinking of a child's name isn't as hard. Thinking of a name for a business, so so that seemed fitting.
I think that we're the same. We've both gone for our names in our business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
definitely.
It does, really. Would you like to start by telling us about your first ever job in food?
So first ever job would probably be when I was about 13 or 12, because my parents had a cheese shop or a deli that we lived above, and so life was cheese and food and, you know, all kinds of lovely local bits. And so I started off work just pricing things up in the shop, serving cheese, and then my dad later on would get me to do kind of canapes for his, because he's a wine merchant. Now it's a wine merchant. Because Waitrose came to town, we couldn't compete with that, and wastage is it's a big thing with cheese, and it's expensive.
Yeah.
So Waitrose came to town and took over, basically.
When Waitrose showed up, what was kind of how quickly did you see the effect of people shopping there?
It's a tough one, because, I mean, they came to town when I was maybe 8.
Mm-hmm.
The shop's been there. Well, I think he stopped, my dad stopped selling cheese and, well, fresh food, maybe when I was about 16 or something. So I think it slowly happened. It slowly happened, but then it just became too much. And now he's just a wine merchant. He sells a little bit of food, a little bit of packeted food, like nice artisan pasta and bits and pieces and stuff. But, that was my first job. In the shop, which is, the commute was just great. Walk downstairs and go into the shop. And pricing, if you ever use a pricing gun, though, when you're about 13, they're really fun.
They look
really fun. See how quickly you can do it. and then he does lots of wine tastings as well. So he used to get me to do canapes for those and when I was in school, kind of thing. So. Yeah, that was my first job, which is, it almost feels like a cheat, because I didn't even have to go for an interview and he couldn't sack me either, so I could be terrible and just stand around and do nothing, which I did, to his horror. He used to hate that. And I'm like, oh, this is boring. it was fun. It was good fun. I worked there for 10 years until I moved to London, really.
Mm.
And the shop's in Wales, it's in South Wales, in Monmouth.
Good education in food.
Yeah, it was always there. I was always cooking as well, because there's always, my mum used to cook stuff for the shop. She used to make pastries and tomato sauce and bits and pieces. And I think I preferred cooking than toys, because we had loads of, I say that, I did like Barbie, actually. But I enjoyed cooking more, and we had lots of out-of-date bits and pieces from the shop, and I'd always, I was just constantly cooking upstairs, experimenting. I remember being literally about 4 and looking at mum's cookbooks and being like, I can't wait until I can read this so that I can make the food. So I think my first dish is so disgusting. It is a fruit salad, which I just put in the oven. And then you get like a burnt crispy top. And my whole family would be like, this is delicious. And my brother would be like, this is so disgusting. Why are we pretending? So yeah, it's always been a thing in my life, a massive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I really love.
Cool.
What made you move to London?
Good question. So there's always been a connection with London. My dad's from London. When my mum moved to the UK, she's from Dominica in the Caribbean. I think the second place she lived was London, and she met my dad here, and they've moved to Wales and or cheese shop or created a cheese shop. And so basically for the shop, my dad would come to London every week or every 2 weeks and get lots of stock for the shop. So he'd get bagels from the Jewish shops, go to some of the nice Polish bakeries, lots of the cheese, all kinds of stuff. Things like even, because the shop's in South Wales, you can't get lots of stuff from South Wales. In the early 90s, you weren't able to get lots of stuff. So even things like cans of Rubicon mango Rubicon, that was like, you didn't see that ever. And you'd get all that kind of stuff. And Monmouth coffee as well. We sell Monmouth coffee. I'm from a town called Monmouth, so that was really fitting. So the reason I moved to London was I was in Cardiff. I went to university in Cardiff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know why I did that. I don't love Cardiff. But went to university, started doing a ceramics degree. I did an art foundation course first in Cardiff, then did ceramics. I kind of went down the art route because parents did food, and I was like, I ain't doing that. That's, even though I loved it, that was kind of the thing that I did at home. I thought it was kind of, they were uncool, you know, as you do.
You always want to do something a little bit different.
Yeah, and I think I was just a bit embarrassed because I was like the dark kid in Monmouth, in our town. And we had a cheese shop in the middle of town. So I was like I had a big flashing light on my head. Like, and it, you know, cheese shops smell like cheese. And so I think I was just a bit embarrassed. It's like, I'm going to do art. And then I went to university, did 1 year of ceramics, and I was like, actually, what am I doing? Like, I kind of grown up enough. That was when I was 21. I was grown up enough to be not embarrassed anymore.
Mm.
I was like, going to London to be a food thing. So I moved to London, and that was when I was 21. That was about 10 years ago. And didn't do anything in food. In fact, I worked in Patisserie Valerie in Spitalfields first. I hated. Sorry, guys.
In the kitchen or front of house?
Front of house.
Okay.
And I was terrible at it. I had to wear a tiny little pinstripe waistcoat and a shirt. Oh, God. So horrible. And I was bad at making coffee. So I went and worked for them first. And then I worked for my brother. He's a very clever person. He's actually got a business on Maltby Street Market. It's a bit of a plug. Maltby Street Market. He's got a Spanish restaurant. It's called Tosino. Tosino. It's said Tofino, like with the Spanish pho. And it specialises in ham. Anyway, he started at Brindisi Marketplace in Borough Market. So he got me a job as a waitress at Brindisi Tapas, the first one. Is that the first one? Yeah. And again, I was a terrible waitress. I think on my first day, I tipped a glass bottle of Coke on someone. And then I got better. I got a bit better. Not much, though, I don't think. It's hard work waitressing. I don't know if you've ever done
really
it.
It's really tough.
You've got to talk to people. You're the general public. Some people don't understand. And if you've got to remember about 20 different things. My memory's bad at the best of times, especially with tapas. There's lots of dishes.
Lots to remember. Yeah.
Dishes to go at. So, it was great learning. It was really good learning. And once you get the hang of it, it's really good. And you've got to carry things, you know, nicely, open bottles, blah, blah, blah. In other countries, for example, Spain, waitering is a...
It's a career.
It's a career, yeah, exactly. And it's a bit sad that it's made to be... that we're supposed to do better than that here.
But yeah. I used to have people, when I was waitressing at a pub in Mayfair, I had people all the time pull me aside, like customers, and being like, what are you doing here? You're better than this.
Yeah,
come on.
I mean...
what are your aspirations? And I was like, I love
that's
it.
That's so weird.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it?
They just no idea what you're
And then
doing.
If I was like, oh, and I was, but it wasn't the reason I was there, and I'd be like, oh, well, I'm at university, and they'd be like, oh, right, jolly good.
Yeah,
you're moving up, it's okay. So
yeah, it's
weird.
Sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, well, that's, I mean, I was just there to earn some cash.
Yeah.
When I was young as well, I was just going out partying as well, so...
I think it's good when you first move somewhere, because that's a good way to meet people, a lot of people
exactly.
on the same wavelength of you as you, they've recently moved,
exactly.
and, you know, you're looking to meet people.
Yeah, I met some really great people there. It was really good. I think my manager thought I was really annoying because I was so crap, but whatever. It was fine. And it was good fun. It was really good fun. That's why I moved to London and kind of what happened. And then finally, at some point, I think it was a confidence thing as well, being, pushing yourself to go and do, putting yourself out there. I was kind of like, how do I get into the food world?
Mm.
It's kind of intimidating, and also... because it's so close to my heart, I guess, you kind of think, you just get scared, you know, like, can I do it? It looks so scary in those kitchens, that, you know, everyone doubts themselves. So finally, I went to Westminster Kingsway College and did professional cookery. And then got myself a job at a restaurant, catering company in Blackheath called Handmade Food. And it was great there. You just got to cook everything. It was really, really, really fun. Had to get there at 6 in the morning, and I lived in East Ham, in a squat in East Ham. And so that took so long. It took so long. But it was really brilliant. Yeah.
Cool. And did you enjoy the course? Because we've heard from other people that's a really good course at Westminster.
Yeah, it is good. You know what? I'm going to sound like a right idiot, but... it was level 2, and lots of the stuff they teach you, I kind of felt like I kind of knew a lot of it already.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things which is great to kind of reiterate things. And also, it puts in proper practice of how to do work in the catering business, how to work properly within a kitchen and do things efficiently. And then actually I used to not go quite often because I was doing one day a week, and I'm really bad with uniform, so so you had to wear a chef's hat, and I've got massive fake hats on my head, and then I hate wearing chef's whites. I don't mind wearing chef whites actually, but chef's trousers, clogs, a little neckerchief, all the stuff was just like... stiff and uncomfortable.
Neckerchief while you're in a hot kitchen.
Well, because of the sweat. That gets to the sweat, apparently. But theory was good. Theory was fun. And the cooking was great as well. And everyone was lovely. But then sometimes, because I was in Victoria, and I don't know, I'm so terrible. I used to just be like, oh, I'm going to go today. Because I was working at Handmade Food at the same time.
Mm.
And with training... alongside each other were great. Everyone always says you really learn when you get into a kitchen, or when you do the things practically. So yeah, it was a really good course. I used to see Angela Hartnett quite often, which was really cool. So I enjoyed it. It was good. I got a nice big certificate with a scoffier on it at the end. Yeah, and it's, I think that's, I did it to get into cooking, to put on my CV, send to someone and say, look, I'm doing this course, because before I feel like I had nothing to, you know, show.
Yeah, it feels like it gives some credibility. Exactly. Even if you don't actually need that, it gives you confidence.
Exactly. And the guys in Handmade Food that hired me, they had all been to Westminster Kingsway College, so they kind of saw that and thought, yeah, going to give her a go. So yeah, it was good. It was really good. It was invaluable. I mean, I'd love to, even now, I'd love to go to somewhere like Leith's and learn. My friend's doing the Leith's course at the moment, and she says it's really brilliant. So
That would be cool.
Yeah, I liked it. It's just far away, and you had to wear stupid clothes.
Just imagine, you know, going back to like the squat in your chef's hat.
I know. Well, luckily we moved halfway through. But yeah, it sounds far away.
Yeah. Okay, and then when did the idea for Aphrodites come about?
So it all started with, where did it start? So it all started with, I am very bad with years. Let's say 5 years ago, I got asked to do a TV program. I did, because I was doing a blog at the time, and I thought, you know what? I saw how do you say his name? Donal Skeyan?
Yeah.
Is that how you say his name?
I don't know how you say quite it, but I know the one you mean.
He's on Saturday Kitchen, and he's Irish, and he did this blog, and I thought, this blog's brilliant. Look how well he's doing. I could do that. So I started writing a blog, which was terrible, and so I was on kind of blog forums. I can't even remember what it's called. It's called Dixie Delicious. It was just so cringy. I remember someone looking at my email address being like, have you had that since you're like 14? Like, oh God. So yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. So I started a blog, I was on lots of blog forums, and then I went on this, a production company got in contact with me saying, there's this new show with Nigella Lawson, Anthony Bourdain and Ludo, I can't pronounce his last name, Lefebvre. Is that who says his last name? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, but I know the program that you're talking about.
The Taste. Yeah. So I went to audition for The Taste, got on it somehow, and then got through to being on Anthony Bourdain's team. So I lived in...
What was the concept of the show?
So it was a funny concept. It was, I think the tagline was like, one dish, one spoon. And basically you had to make a dish but get all of it. Well, you had to get the kind of perfect mouthful on a spoon, a kind of Chinese dumpling. I don't know what they're called. You know,
the ceramic spoons.
Yeah. A perfect bite on one of those spoons. And then Nigella Lawson, Ludo and Anthony Bourdain would taste your spoon and, you know, decide whether it's delicious or terrible, basically. And the beginning of the show, the very first episode, we've got about 20 people or something, and they blind taste your food. You have one dish, blind taste your food, and then they kind of decide whether they liked it or not. You go in and sit in front of them like a little school kid. You're like, oh God, they're going to slag me off. And then they tell you whether they want you on their team or not.
Okay.
So I had Anthony Bourdain and Ludo wanting me on their team.
What did you cook?
What did I cook? I made, I think I made some kind of mashed up carrot and tahini thing with lamb neck, which I think Anthony Bourdain loved because he's an awful person, an awful person, poor guy, which he loved. And oh God, I've got memory loss. So maybe, I don't know, it was that kind of vibe, feta, stuff like that. So those two said, put a little green card up saying, yeah, be on my team. And then Nigella was kind of like, not for me. So I had to decide, which felt very cool. And I chose Anthony Bourdain because it's just very cool.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's exactly a year since he died, actually.
Is it really?
Like a couple of days ago. Last week or something, which is sad. Anyway. So I ended up being on his team with four of the people, and then I got to the final. I'd lived in Slough for a month, which was interesting. Travel Lodge, or Slough it's called.
Isn't Slough supposed to be one of the best places to live or something?
Is it?
Yeah, it was like really? Voted, yeah.
Oh.
I'm sure.
I think it's just the name that doesn't sound, maybe, I haven't been there.
Yeah, and I think there's a poem.
The name doesn't help it.
Slough. So I was there for a month, ended up staying until the end, until the last episode, so the three of us in the final, and Debbie won. She did very well. I had a mess up, a complete mess up, and my food definitely wasn't as good as the other two.
But you got to the final.
Got to the final.
Pretty amazing.
I know. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
Lots of people always ask me, did you enjoy it? I was like, I was so scared the whole time. I was so scared. It was terrifying.
But if you were in a travel lodge, you weren't able to go back and practice.
Well, that's the thing. So we used to go back one day, which is a Saturday afternoon. I think we have Saturday off and then we go back for Sunday. So we had one day to practice. I don't think I did. One week I even just went out and got really hammered and stayed up until 4 in the morning. I had to go back and was like, oh my God, I'm going to cook a chocolate cake. This is going to be horrible. And actually it took its toll because after a few weeks, people were kind of seasoning things wrong. They weren't doing things as well as they could. So the production company hired us a kitchen in Slough nearby. It's like a school kitchen or something where we could go and practice the food beforehand, which was great.
That's good.
Yeah, so that happened, and then, which was really cool. After that, me and my partner Will decided to start a street food business, which I loved making, or I still do, I love making bread, flatbreads, and doing savoury flavours. So we started a flatbread business. We bought a trailer with a wood-fired oven on it from a farmer in Stratford-upon-Avon, which he built. It's very cool. And kind of, it looked very kind of country style, and we stripped it. Painted it white, and I put gold mosaic over the bit where you put stuff in. And we started selling flatbreads, wood-fired flatbreads at Maltby Street. And we did that for a couple of years, I think, every weekend. And it was really great. It was really hard. Lighting the oven on time and then regulating, because it was very makeshift. So the ovens you get in pizza restaurants and things, they have gas and they have wood, and they're engineered very well, so that you can cook pizzas to perfection and stuff. So, and they're running constantly all day. This is smaller and a bit more difficult, so regulating how much wood you've got on and rotating all of the flatbreads inside was quite challenging. But people seemed to really like them, and it was really fun. It was really, really fun. But we were only at Maltby Street Market because other markets were like, we're not having a fire, like a wood fire, at our market in central London. No way. And Maltby Street were great. Because we were at the entrance to the market. In fact, I think we burnt their vine, which is above, on the wall above us, because we had this huge flue that used to come out the top. And, you know, put all the really hot air onto the wall. So we were only there. And then that's when I made pomegranate ketchup. I actually started making pomegranate ketchup. I had a hangover one morning, and I basically, it's a weird story because I actually hate ketchup. Since I was a little kid, tomato ketchup's been my phobia, like an actual, like bordering on phobia. So I made pomegranate ketchup in order to, as something that I could have on my bacon sandwich that morning. And then I gave it to my friends a few weeks later and they were like, what is this? It's really, really great. And then I just started serving it with the flatbreads at the market. And then we started jarring it up and selling it on the market. And then my partner Will was like, we need to sell this ketchup. Let's do a product. And let's revamp the business, because flatbreads was a bit kind of like, you know, makeshift. Like, yeah, let's go to Walby Street every week and throw flatbreads at people. It's just a bit kind of... And I was doing all the cooking in my house, so...
It's so exhausting doing that.
And it's hard,
yeah.
It is hard. I mean, you're setting up a kitchen every single day you go there. Mm. I'm literally, every week, I'd be like, where did that go last time? And just spend about an hour just moving things around.
Mm-hmm.
So we stopped that. We sold the pizza oven and decided to set to work making pomegranate ketchup. A thing
mm-hmm.
that you can sell in the shop with a barcode on it and everything. And it's really difficult. You have to think about so many things, and there's a lot of money that goes into it. I don't know, the way we did it, I'm sure everyone's the same. A lot of money goes into it, which I was always so shocked.
Which area was it, kind of packaging, design, and sort of stock, what were the big...
All of it. So the first thing, the very first thing we decided to do is we thought about, because the ketchup's made with pomegranate molasses,
mm-hmm.
and the first thing we needed was a lot of pomegranate molasses. So we found someone in Lebanon who sells pomegranate molasses, some really lovely pomegranate molasses, and we bought a ton and a half.
Oh my God.
Which is...
Did you have a commercial kitchen at this point?
No.
Okay.
That's nuts. So, like,
so
that's
physically,
a lot. How... What are we talking? Like, this room?
So, yeah. So, there's... I can't remember... Yeah, there's quite a lot of this room. They came in big plastic buckets. What happened... Well, my partner, Will, he had a warehouse that he shared with our other friend, Matt, that... In Walthamstow, they used to do up trucks in it, make like motorhomes, and we used to store the pizza oven there.
Okay.
So the idea was to, so we ordered the pomegranate molasses and it was going to get shipped to there. Turned up at my house on like a random day in I don't know, in the middle of, when was it? In the summer sometime. And me and this guy, Will's out, me and this guy moved like, a ton and a half of...
All on those big pallets.
Just by hand. Just big... They're like 25 kilo buckets of pomegranate ketchup. I was in so much pain the next day. And then we put it in all in... Oh, no, that's it. My partner, Will, he used to have a Sprinter van, a big van, so we just put it all straight into his van.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a bit like, oh, my God, what are we doing? So that turned up, which is very exciting, and it's delicious pomegranate molasses.
Also, must have just felt very real then to have a ton of
pomegranate.
Yeah, like, okay, we've got to do this now.
Yeah, oh no, it's real. Yeah, exactly. So that arrived, and that was the biggest thing. I mean, everything else, the pomegranate ketchup is a really simple recipe. It's got onions and spices and tomato puree and water, garlic,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's simple, sugar. Actually, that's another thing. At the beginning, it was very sweet. And then Jamie Oliver did that sugar thing and we were like, oh God, it can't be this sweet anymore. I think, we had to reduce the sugar by a lot.
I bet even in the beginning, it was a lot less than like what you would find in ketchup.
Oh, I don't know, actually. Maybe. I can't remember. Yeah, I think it was quite jammy.
Okay.
I think the very first one was quite jammy. Probably less. But anyway, we reduced that a lot, and it's still delicious. And then I used to make it at home. Actually, no, that's a lie. So that arrived. We sorted out all the ingredients. Then we went to the... We had to figure out the name. Did the name, which took a long time. A lot of bubble charts. Lots of things connected to pomegranates. And then we decided to... And then we had to do packaging, which is major. Because I think what is important about a product is the brand. People have to really, really, really connect to the brand. You have to make a really slick brand. It has to look great on the shelf. And that's, I mean, that's the first thing you see, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see it and then you read what it is. Mm. So making that as clear as possible. And making something that looks... We wanted to make something that looked beautiful because Aphrodite is, it's kind of a, you know, it's goddess of love and all that. It's got to be really beautiful. So we went to some really amazing graphic designers. We shopped around and, God, graphic designers are so expensive. It's like, have you guys used graphic designers? Have you got friends?
Yeah, I used a friend for my, well, an acquaintance, so it wasn't so bad, but
exactly,
yeah.
Like the big dogs, it's like nuts. You're talking a lot of money, so... And then even the guys that we went with, they're brilliant, but they're expensive because they do really great things, and they've worked for some really brilliant companies. They really got us, and they made us beautiful brand our brand colours are gold and navy blue. Like, made us amazing business cards that. Well, you know, you can use them forever. They're sturdy as hell. They look really, really lovely. And then designed the packaging, which, I mean, essentially it's just a label on the jar and the label. A label on the jar and the label on the lid.
We should also say that people listening right now should pause the podcast.
And go and have a
and
just
go and
look at the packaging.
It is stunning.
Oh.
It is so beautiful.
I would like say it is like top five of the most beautiful brand packaging.
100%.
It's incredible.
It's so lovely. And
well,
it's so different to any other type of condiment or
different.
Any sort of sauce packaging.
Well, the idea is that we wanted it to be really beautiful, and we looked at other brands that we kind of liked, and we liked that kind of illustration thing. And because of Aphrodite's, there's a story behind it. We wanted to tell a story about, or bring the Aphrodite's story into the product somehow. And what we did was, things like Kraken rum. They've got that really amazing...
The Kraken,
yeah,
yeah,
that's it, that's what it's called. So things like that we thought was just really brilliant. So we told them that, and they found a guy called Andrew Davidson. I think that's his name. It's been a while since I've said it. I think that's him. And he illustrates Harry Potter books. And so he carves wood and then he prints it. So he designed us the picture on the pomegranate ketchup label, which the idea was not to have Aphrodite in the picture. And actually Aphrodite was kind of depicted by the logo, which is kind of quite a pretty bold A. So the label on the front of the pomegranate ketchup depicts one of Aphrodite's stories, myths even. And then we got it done on, we really concentrated on every single little bit, and like the paper, making
paper's
sure it's
also really
nice. The nice paper,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
and then,
it makes a difference.
And then that, so that was a long process. We kind of put a lot of time into that. And then you have, there's so many parts to making a product, so you've got to get your brand, you've got to get the packaging, then you've got to perfect the recipe, which took a long time to do, and figure out the most logical way, because actually the way that I started making it is different to the way that we make it now, kind of thing. It just has to change when you scale things up. And then the next bit is getting it to market, which is really difficult as well. I find I'm personally, I'm not very business minded. I'm not very academic. I've always been more practical. I did art. I did food, like cooking, my whole life. That's what I like the best. So when it comes to, and I wasn't that good in school, kind of thing. And when it comes to sitting down and, you know, using your brain for, oh God, things that aren't cooking.
Yeah, but it's all like the pricing structures and that kind of stuff.
It's completely new. Is it just a new thing as well?
Yeah, I'm terrible with numbers. So when it came, we got to the next bit, which is putting it to market, and we have to read all the. I read a book about Twitter. I read a book about Instagram. We read all the business books. We go to business talks, all that kind of stuff. We really get stuck in about how, and marketing books, all of those kind of things, which again, it doesn't come naturally to me. So I really, really like have to concentrate on getting it into my brain somehow. And it was with my partner, Will, and he's very good at that. I'm kind of the creative, like, well, airy-fairy a bit more. You know, I like to cook and bits and pieces, and he's all about the numbers. So he's good at that kind of stuff. So in that way, it's good in a business to
good
be like that.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't work if you... Maybe it does, but I mean, it worked pretty well because we both had different things to bring to the table. But so yeah, I had to learn a lot about marketing, getting it out there, and I think that's the most difficult bit is with pomegranate ketchup. It's a difficult product to sell because something like you've got the wonderful. Have you heard of Manny Life peanut butter?
Yeah, it's delicious.
It's absolutely delicious.
And everyone knows what peanut butter is.
And everyone knows what peanut butter is, and it's just I think the market needed something like that. And you've had Pip and Nut as well. Pip and Nut, she's done an amazing job. You know, all those guys. It's a staple that you have in your house that kind of people want to buy a better version of it. You know, like not sun pad. Whereas pomegranate ketchup, it's not tomato ketchup. People want to buy a better tomato ketchup. But pomegranate ketchup is just that little bit, just a bit weird, or a little bit more different.
Yeah.
So finding a place for it on the shelf is, for some people, was quite difficult, I think. Or for us, it was quite difficult. And I'm terrible at making phone calls to people. I get scared at ringing.
That's horrible.
Which is not good when you've got...
Especially when it's a buyer.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Or even existing customers, you think, oh God, I'm pestering them. It's like, are you busy? Oh no, it's okay, I'll call back later. Have you got enough stock? Can I sell you more, please? So I spent months and months driving just to every single deli in London and walking in and being like, hey, would you like to, you know, have a sample of my pomegranate ketchup? And slowly but surely we got lots of stockists around London and further afield. But it's a hard thing to, you've really got to keep up. You've really got to keep on going. You've got to remind people that you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike having, say, a restaurant or something where you're on public show all the time, you're there in the middle of a high street going, look, hello, come in, see me. So a small product is kind of, you've got to remind people that you're delicious. You've got to do tastings, you've got to do samplings, you've got to... really, really work at it, which is really good, and it's great to have a project like that. But I just definitely found it very, very hard work to do selling one thing as well, because I think mostly I'm a cook, I'm not a salesperson, and with food. So with the flatbread business, I'd get so excited about all the ingredients that we had. I had a great fruit and veg supply based in Essex, which was so seasonal. And every week I'd be like, I'm going to change the menu, I'm going to do this. And then people would come back and be like, where's that delicious asparagus flatbread you did? I was like, ah, that's gone, I've got another thing. Done something else. Whereas pomegranate ketchup or making a product, you're selling the same thing over and over again. And I found it a bit difficult.
Yeah, I think because of the nature of the product, you had to invest so much of yourself in it, because you've got to show people how to use it, show people...
Well, that's it, education as well, educating people about how to use it, because I did a lot of recipe writing of things that you can use the pomegranate ketchup for, because people are kind of... Obviously, you can use it as a ketchup, but people just don't know what...
Yeah, people want to be told.
Want to be told.
This is what it is, and this is what you use it for.
And it's got a high price point as well. It's like £4.50 for a jar, which isn't £4.50, or depending on where you go, approximately £4.50 for a jar. So people, they want to get their money's worth. And the ketchup's actually, that's another thing that's hard, because ketchup's a cheap product, traditionally.
Yeah.
And pomegranate ketchup is not a cheap product. And actually, the margins are really tight.
Yeah.
So we don't actually make that much money on it because of production and all that kind of stuff. So basically, my story is of someone who has started a product business, but is one of those people who realized it was just incredibly difficult. And production now is really quite small, and I'm doing more cooking at the moment. So we still sell a little bit, but... I think I realised it's something that I'm not going to... pursued it for a long time in a very, very, very serious way, and like that, and put everything into it. And then realised that it's never going to be the thing that we wanted it to be. It's because of the nature of the product.
Mm-hmm.
And also we got at one point, so back to... when we started the business and we did all the packaging and put it to market, we also got Railway Arch in Forest Gate, which is an amazing place for food right now. First it started off with these guys called the Wanstead Tap, which is, I think it was pretty out there that he set up in Forest Gate, because I mean, have you been to Forest Gate?
A friend of mine actually bought a house there last year, I've started
recently.
Because
before that, not much is going on there. And Dan from the Wanstead Tap, he opened up in the Railway Arch just behind my house. First person along a residential street, basically, of Railway Arches. Mm-hmm. And his shop is behind our house. And you could go in there for a drink. And I didn't go in there for about a year. I didn't even know it was there. Finally, I figured it out. And then all of a sudden, lots of other bits started popping up around Forest Gate. And it's a really wonderful community vibe there. You literally walk along the street and you're like, hi, guys. Hi. You see everybody that you know. It's really nice. So just behind our house, there's this run of railway arches. And we decided to get one further down the road, which is... it's had a big courtyard, one big one and another small one. We built a kitchen in one, and we had storage for the other. So what we decided was we were going to do pomegranate ketchup production in there instead of renting out a kitchen. And then we're also going to do street food, because we decided that's how we were going to market the pomegranate ketchup, sell it on our street food van. So we bought a really, really beautiful old Citroen van. I don't know if you've seen them. You know the ones.
The dream.
they're so lovely. I mean, I never drove it because it was like 1960 something. It had a choke. The gear stick was basically just like a terrifying shard of metal that comes out of the floor. And it had no power steering, so my poor partner Will would drive it to all of the markets, and just you could see him just being like, trying to turn a corner spending like 5 minutes doing the steering wheel and back the other way. And then you'd all smell like petrol. But we bought this van. Someone did it up for us, which took a long time. And actually, he was turned out to be a bit annoying. It took far longer than we thought. And then sprayed it a beautiful blue. And then my partner, Will, he kitted it out really nicely inside. And then we were at Maltby Street Market, and then we were with Curb, mm-hmm. and we were with Street Dots as well, who were in Broadgate Circle and other places around London. And so we'd sell the pomegranate ketchup there, and then we'd serve our pita breads, which are stuffed pita breads with things like slow cooked meats, pomegranate ketchup, homemade sauces. I'd make all the pickles, bits and pieces, and then we'd do a different selection of salads and things like that for it's basically for like business. In fact, we're in King's Cross now, and we used to sell just at the top of, just before Granary Square.
Yeah.
As well up there. So we got the railway arch to do the production for the street food van, and we'd store the van in there as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, you just drive straight in.
That's cool.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool. And then I think Will got a bit fed up of driving the street food around, doing the street food. And I think we both got a bit kind of, we've done street food for a long time now.
Just takes its toll on you. I think it's a very exhausting job setting up, and all the stuff's really heavy, and it's weekends.
Everything. Yeah. It's a tough business. And actually, the best, like I said earlier, I like changing the menu, but the best street food vendors, they sell the same thing. People know what they sell.
Yeah.
You know, they've got a big. You see those things at like Glastonbury. Falafel, that's it.
Yeah.
Boom, and you're like, I know what I want. That's what I want. We did pitters, but I used to change the menu, and it was my creative side wanted to
be creative.
Yeah, exactly. More interesting things. You guys.
Yeah.
No. So in the end, we sold the van to a lovely couple. They're in Anglesey. They've got a Spanish restaurant. If you ever go there, go and check out their food. So we sold the van, and we made the store the bigger part of our railway arch. We changed that from storage to a really beautiful supper club area, kind of painted the floor grey, painted all the walls white. Will built a bar. We put glass windows and doors in the front with kind of gold writing saying Aphrodite's on it. And then we started doing supper clubs where I could be really creative, which is really, really exciting and actually really terrifying. I remember the first day that I did one, I got my friends to come along, and I remember starting to do a speech. I was just like, oh my God, this is the scariest thing. So I spoke to them with my piece of paper that I prepared in front of my face so that I couldn't see anyone. It's more scary when it's your friends. I don't know why.
I think it is. I don't know why that is. Because you care about what they think more, maybe.
Because you care about what they think.
Yeah,
because you're looking out into an audience of, like, familiarity and personalities and history, whereas if it's strangers, you're kind of like, it's a bit more blank.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, oh, they're just people.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. So we did supper clubs in there, which is really great. And
how many guests could you see?
30. We got
that's a good number.
Yeah, it's really good.
And it was really nice. We had these tables, two giant tables, which Will had built. Which is really handy. He built these, like, they look like they're made out of ash wood. They're like 2 ton or something like that. I think that's a lie. Half a ton, maybe. Sorry. He built them for a friend, and then his friend wasn't using them. So we got to use these beautiful tables.
Everyone needs a Will in their business.
He sounds really handy.
He sounds great.
Really handy. He's one of those people who can Google something, like, and then just be able to do it. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, some people just...
Yeah, he's a clever boy. So he built these tables, and then we use these... People sit around these tables, and it's just the atmosphere in there is just so nice. It's really nice. At the same time, the idea for getting the arch was to rent it out to other businesses. So at that time, we had a lovely, brilliant lady called Bea, who runs Bea's Bakery, come and ask us. She was moving from Farringdon to Forest Gate, and she had a kitchen in something, Oak. What's it? On the other side of town? I think that's where it was, yeah. So she came and used our kitchen. Well, she came and asked us if we had a free space. So we used to share our kitchen with her and my other wonderful friend, Despina, who's a Greek lady who cooks for Today Bread in Walthamstow. What's it called? Yeah, pretty sure it's called that. So we were renting the kitchen out. So that was kind of paying the rent as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then rent went up and life became harder and the pomegranate ketchup wasn't selling as much and people using the kitchen not as much. And so we made a decision to get rid of the arch, which was really sad at the time.
Yeah.
It took a little bit of a while to kind of come to terms with. And by this time, Forest Gate had got lots of other businesses in it. We had Burgess and Hall, which was just down the road, who wine merchants, really, really brilliant two people, Roz and Paul, who we did actually a few supper clubs with. And then there's lots of other people. There's Arch Rivals that arrived there, who's a lovely guy called Michael. So it was all kind of start getting kind of exciting in Forest Gate, but for us it was kind of like make or break. It's either we throw everything at it and then maybe fail, which we'd already thrown a lot at it, or kind of call it a day in that space and buy ourselves a house, which ultimately what we've been trying to do for a long time. Or building up to do, and never had enough cash for it. And so we ended up getting rid of the archway and setting about finding a house. I got an extra job at Padella. I got an extra job at Padella. where I was making sourdough bread and all the baked things.
Was that a great place to work?
It was really great. Yeah, it was really great. It was wonderful. It was a really small team of us because you've got the main kitchen in Borough Market, and then you've got the bakery, which is further back in Borough Market. It's kind of a kitchen upstairs behind the main market. There's about five or six of us that we work together, and I learned how to make sourdough bread properly, which is brilliant. And just they've got a good ethic, great ingredients. Tim and Jordan are pretty cool, who are the owners. That was great. And then I was doing the pomegranate ketchup at the same time, still doing the pomegranate ketchup, but at the same time was working in Padella doing pomegranate ketchup, which is really hard doing both. But it was great, and then we managed to save up enough money and we bought a house in southeast London, and then we basically like just slipped away from Forest Gate because we were kind of friends with everyone. I feel like because it was all so busy and stressful, I feel like we just kind of sloped away without saying like proper goodbyes to anyone. All of a sudden we kind of disappeared. So bye guys, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry about that. And it was kind of a bit sad.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, you don't want to go.
Yeah, you don't want to say.
Bye.
Yeah.
So we bought a house in southeast London, and And now, what's happening? So now, actually, I'm writing a book at the moment.
I was thinking as you were talking, I was like, she should be writing a book.
I've got lots of recipes. I used to write, I'm a recipe writer as well.
Mm.
Well, I've written a lot of recipes for Aphrodites, etc. And I've got a lot of recipes. And so I'm like very slowly writing a book. I mean, like, I haven't looked at my laptop in a few days kind of thing. It's very, very slowly. But at the moment, Aphrodites is still going. We've got a small production of ketchup.
How, with the ketchup now, what's kind of a run? What are you doing?
Oh, like tiny, tiny amounts. We sell to my dad South Wales, which is very sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, he has like blackboard signs outside his shop saying like, come and buy Dixie's ketchup, kind of thing, which is really sweet. So sell to my dad, and then just like a few delis and kind of online shops around the UK.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm not pushing it anymore because
you're just in a moment where you're.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep making it. Actually, my brother has this. As I said earlier, he has this Spanish restaurant which specializes in Spanish ham, which is in Mulberry Street Market, and. He's also opened the restaurant next door, which used to be St. John's, and now now he's taken it over. It's called BS, which I'm pretty sure stands for bacon sandwich. So he's going to do what he's going to market as the best bacon sandwich in London. and he needs pomegranate ketchup for it.
Yeah,
so I'm
bacon
gonna...
sandwich with pomegranate ketchup sounds pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. So he's got the guys at O'Shea's, which is the butcher behind him, to cure him some, because it's a vermouth bar as well.
Wow.
So they've vermouth cured him some bacon, which is made specially for it, and then he's going to put pomegranate ketchup in it. So I'm going to be selling him big tubs of that, and then you'll be able to buy it there as well.
Cool. We'll have to do a field trip to Maltby and check out his
Yeah, calm down. Let me know. It's really nice. So, so you'll be able to buy it there. So production is still going on, but it's low. You know, it's especially, she's got to really find it.
Exclusive.
Yeah, I think that's nice though. You've got this really cool individual product, and the people that know about it love it.
Yeah, it's all I can. I mean, at this stage, it's all I can manage doing. We tried to go to a manufacturer to do it, and it's the same. It's the same people that kind of make stuff for them, and masons and stuff. So they're really nice, small, kind of as artisan as you can get factory.
Yeah.
but it's still too expensive to make. So carried on doing ourselves, which I think is nice anyway. So at the moment, I'm writing recipes. There's a recipe book on the way, which might take a few years, but it's coming, and I'm not going to tell you what it's about yet.
Are you working with a publisher, or are you going to send a
proposal? I'm going to. Well, no, I'm not. Apparently, I've got an agent. My stepmom. Is a literary agent, and her business partner, actually, I've written a book proposal before, straight after The Taste, and it was horrible, it's a terrible book, and it never got, I don't think it ever went anywhere, it did not go anywhere, it was just kind of in a rush of like, okay, you've done this TV programme, now write a book, and... Mm-hmm. I don't know what I was doing. So I feel like once I've done it, I can go to him and ask him to do something for me.
Yeah,
that's really exciting.
And then also at the moment I'm working for Fat Macy's, which is, have you heard of them?
Yeah.
Well, only through researching what you're doing. And I was,
which is really exciting. I went to the BBC Good Food, or the BBC Food and Farming Awards on, what day is it? On Wednesday.
Yeah.
With them. So Meg, who's the founder, she's a brilliant person. She's my stepmom's niece. She's kind of my cousin. She started Fat Macy's 3 years ago. Social enterprise. She did a course called the Year Here course, which I should be able to explain better, but you go and kind of work for charities and such like, and then you start up your own business. She decided to start up social enterprise. Which basically it aims to tackle the well, young people living in hostels, so homeless people. So primarily we're a catering company, and we employ these guys, these young people who live in hostels, and we help them raise money to get permanent accommodation, so permanent flat kind of thing, which would be, I mean, it's very difficult to get out of that housing, you know, get out of the
It's just such a leap. It's too hard. There's not enough support there in the middle.
No, there's not. And there's a kind of clause where if you're earning a certain amount of money or doing a certain amount of hours, then you're no longer eligible to live in the hostel. So you can't, essentially, you can never
That's
really get.
That's really tricky. Yeah.
So they work with us at events and supper clubs and such like, and they all have a kind of account with us. So once they've done 200 hours, they've got enough cash to get a deposit on a flat, and then we kind of help, we support them through the whole way. So we're almost like a little family as well, which is really great. You help them getting passports and support work and all that kind of stuff. And then we do these great events. We do loads of catering all over London, and we do supper clubs as well. And it's like working with your friends. So it's just, it's really cool. I really, really love it. Yeah.
Good.
So that's me mostly at the moment. So Meg, I'm going to plug Meg a second. Meg was nominated for a Pat Llewellyn Award on the food programme for the Food and Farming Awards. And we went to the awards on Wednesday in Bristol, which is, I was like, because Meg's background isn't so much food, but she knows about it. But, and then we went with Alice, the other lady that works there. And so I was just like, oh my God, look at all these people, look at all these like really famous food people. I was just really nervous the whole time. I was like, oh God, they're looking at me, should I go and talk? No, I can't talk to you. It's so scary. In fact, Ellie Pear was there as well, who you've had on here. I'm pretty sure she's there. But unfortunately, Meg didn't win. An amazing... Two other people won, their doctors who are kind of making it so the new doctors are learning more about nutrition and putting more of that into the way they learn about medicine, which is really important. So they're doing a great job. But it was really fun. It was a really good evening.
Yeah, I bet. And amazing to even be nominated for that.
I was so excited. Meg was kind of like terrified about going up on stage, and she didn't know what she was going to say and things like that. So she was almost like, when her name didn't get called out. But it's a great accolade to have, and the food program's just brilliant. I don't know if you listen to it. It's my favourite.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it.
Can you tell us, like, with these different sort of areas to your work at the moment, what's a typical week like for you? Do you have a kind of structure you give yourself?
So it's very, very all over the place. There's no routine whatsoever. So the nature of catering is that you get some people, I mean, you get some weeks where there's not much, and you get some weeks where there's absolutely loads, and then you get some people that order breakfast for a breakfast delivery at 10. No. That never happens. So breakfast delivery at 7:30, and then or a private dinner or a lunch. So it's really, really all over the place. And then we do lots of admin bits and pieces. But it's great. I quite like that every day is different, and I don't do a set week of work. And actually, it works out really well for me, because we're doing up our house at the moment, and I'm doing it up on my own. That's an absolute lie. We're doing it up by ourselves, so I can, whenever time I'm not working, I can just beaver away at polyfilling something else kind of thing. It's quite variable. What have we got coming? We've got quite a busy week next week. We're just moving into a different kitchen in Hackney Wick, which is going to be really fun. And then we've got a tiny wedding to cater for, a 70th birthday party in Kensington, And yeah, the summer's looking busy, and we've got a really wonderful supper club coming up in Dulwich Picture Gallery.
Sorry, ooh, lovely.
In August. Yeah, which you can buy tickets now. So yeah, we've got a few bits and pieces in the pipeline. So if you want any catering, give us a call, and it goes to a really great cause.
Yeah. Where can people buy tickets to the supper club?
So you can buy tickets to the supper club on Fat Macy's website, which is fatmacys.org.
Okay.
Really simple. And it's quite often, it's either my menu or Eleni, who's the other chef, her menu.
Maybe if you've got a newsletter, people can sign
up. I've got a newsletter. Yeah. That's my job, actually. I need to get that done when I get home. It's on my list of stuff to do. Sign up to our... the newsletter for that, and that's what I'm doing for the foreseeable future. And then I'm having a baby, and who knows what happens when that happens. I mean, apparently it's really hard work, so we'll see. And the idea is for me to kind of get this book done, and then get back into kind of doing my own kind of small events. It's just Fat Macy's came about in a time where we just moved and I'd stopped working at Padella, and I needed some cash, and this worked out very well, and I can still be creative, but also without any of the responsibility.
And working with good people,
and
like
working
you said,
with good
friends.
People. So there will be more Aphrodite's events coming up, but it just depends when. I don't know, it depends when... stop being exhausted from having a child. I don't know. I've never done it before, so.
Yeah. Give yourself some leeway.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's me.
Cool. Where can people find you and just keep up to date with what you're up to?
So, yes, this is a great question. Follow me on Instagram. my Instagram's Aphrodite's Food. You can follow me on Instagram. And then there's my website, aphroditesfood.com. It's all the same. It's all Aphrodite's Food. And then you can also follow Fat Macy's. Oh, that's another thing. Fat Macy's, we've secured a property in Peckham, and we're opening a restaurant.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Just
in my mind.
Small detail.
You know, I'm still excited about food and farming awards. I think that's what to get my mind. Yeah.
Are you going to be working in the restaurant or just helping with sort of menus and
well, yeah, that's a good question at the moment. I mean, ideally I'll be working in the restaurant, and you know, and it's there for training. It'll be a restaurant. There's a flat above, which hopefully will be a kind of halfway house for the trainees, maybe. I don't know, there's a lot of things to discuss.
Mm.
But it's all very exciting. It's on Peckham Rye. These things take a long time to go through, so there's a lot of bits and pieces that need to be finalised. But it's a lovely little spot, which it's a dry heat cleaner called Charisma with a K. And I really want to keep the sign. It's so good. If you go on the Fat Macy's Instagram, you'll see it on there. So that's happening as well. So it's all
happening.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And where can people buy the ketchup?
My website.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, and then soon to come...
Do you like nice gift boxes?
Yeah, yeah.
And the bag as well.
Yeah, we do the tote bag. The gift boxes might be sold out at the moment.
Okay.
But you can definitely buy the ketchup on the website, yes. £4.50.
And do buy it, it's so good.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I can't believe I didn't bring you any.
And then just marvel at the packaging.
Yeah.
Just put it on your mantelpiece.
Yeah.
That's a nice idea.
Yeah.
I like that.
Cool, well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dixie.
You.
That was really interesting and gosh.
It was. It was so good.
You can find us on Instagram at What's Cooking Podcast, on Twitter at What's Cooking Pod, or drop us an email to thewhatscookingpodcast@gmail.com.
Hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to subscribe, review, and leave us a star rating. Bye.
Bye.